Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. Yes, this is the second episode of Franchise Today this week, because yesterday we had a special edition of my always special guest, Susan Black Belt, the founder of Dealmaker Summit, and I were on yesterday talking about the upcoming second annual Dealmaker Summit in Chicago at the Sofitel Hotel in late part of August. That episode, that segment of Franchise Today is available on demand along with all of our other segments at blogtalkradio.com/franchisetodayshow. If you want to know anything about private equity and franchising, listen to that show, yesterday's show with Susan. Get in touch with Susan. Wealth of information, really great information that's out there because, you know, there's so many organizations, you know, even if you're entertaining some type of private equity position, you really need to look at this event and participate and learn as much as you can. Also, you know, Amy Chang of Chang Cohen was one of our guests in our fourth annual franchise legal series that we completed earlier this month. We had eight great attorneys on for the fourth year in a row. Anyway, Amy's segment was private equity and franchising. That's also available on demand. And, of course, Chang Cohen is the titanium sponsor for the upcoming Dealmaker Summit. So really good information there and happy to be able to share. Talking about events going on right now, the International Franchise Expo. Shout out to all of our friends at the Franchise Expo. Safe travels if you're not there yet. Of course, safe travels when you leave. Looking forward to hearing a lot about the event. Send us some tweets. Send us some Facebook posts, emails, whatever. Let us know what's going on. Hopefully, it'll be a very successful event, and my best wishes to all. Next week is the Franchise Update Media Group's Franchise Consumer Marketing Conference on Tuesday and Wednesday in Buckhead, Georgia. I'll be speaking at the event as one of the panelists, and also I'm pleased to say that Franchise Foundry, who produces the Franchise Today show, is one of the bronze sponsors at the event. That's going to be a great event. If you attended FranCamp, as I did last month in Atlanta, don't think for a moment that you don't have to attend this event as well. It's going to take things from a different perspective. Last month was technology and digital technology and marketing. This month is going to be a little bit more of the practical side of marketing. There's going to be a lot of chief marketing officers there, as well as chief executive officers from a lot of different franchise companies, a lot of suppliers, great information. I'm really looking forward to seeing Eric Qualman, the author of Socionomics, one of my favorites, and one I often refer to. He's going to be one of the keynote speakers. So, again, that's next week. I would like to reach back out to Mark Liston, president of Glass Doctors. Great show last week on Franchise Today as we talked about operations support and franchise relations. Who better to do it than somebody from the Dwyer Group and specifically Mark Liston? It was a great, great, great show. Thank you, Mark. I realized this morning as I was looking through some statistics that it was one of our highest rated shows of the year as we were able to see the on-demand listenership just skyrocket. It was really, really great. Next week, Ahmed Pamecha, CEO and founder at FranConnect, will be my guest as we wrap up the franchise model series, and we'll be talking about technology in franchising. Should be a great show. And also, we have a little bit change of direction for the summer. We have been planning a summer-long franchisor spotlight series. Seems that we're just having all kinds of scheduling problems, as you can imagine, with people finally taking a break, going on vacation, what have you, and reluctantly and really sadly, I'm going to have to cancel the summer series. It's just been too difficult to get any firm commitments, and as we do have to schedule in advance. So as we've done the last 3 years, we've always gone on hiatus during the summer. We'll be doing that again this summer. So next week will be our last show of the season, and we'll pick back up right after Labor Day. in conjunction with the IFA Public Affairs Conference in Washington, D.C., and we've got some great guests already lined up, spearheaded by Mary Thompson, also from the Dwyer Group, and this year's Bonnie Levine Award winner. She's already committed to be on the show in September, October, and November. We'll be in and around the Leadership and Development Conference, again in Buckhead Franchise Update Group, as well as the West Coast Franchise Expo, and then wrap up the year in December around, you know, a recap of the year, highlights of the year, and really make a push into the first part of 2014, which is the reason why I really want to spend some time in November around franchise sales and development. And, of course, as we talk about franchise sales and development, and we are in the franchise model series, we realize that it's one of the cornerstones of the franchise business model, and of course it's this week's topic as the series continues on Franchise Today. I am joined today by Robert Stidham. Robert is the president of Franchise Dynamics, the world's leading full-service franchise sales outsourcing firm, also known as an FSO, based in suburban Chicago. Franchise Dynamics currently represents a number of emerging to large-size franchisors in a wide variety of categories throughout the United States and worldwide. Robert's an accomplished franchise sales and business development executive, proven track record of increasing franchise units' revenue and profitability while gaining market share and expanding brand awareness for both new franchise concepts and established brands. He has held a variety of positions in the franchise industry in franchise development, operations, consulting, and as an international franchise company president, Robert is active in the IFA, serving as a member of the International Committee and Research Committee, having previously served as a member of the IFA Membership Committee. Robert, welcome to Franchise Today.
Thank you, Paul. Delighted to be here with you and your audience.
Well, we're delighted to have you here today. And tell us, or tell our listening audience, you know, where you are today, because I really think it just lends to the international presence that you have.
Yeah, thank you. I am very pleased to actually be on the interview from the Cartridge World EMEA, if you're not familiar with the acronym Europe, the Middle East, and Africa, conference in lovely Harrogate, England. So I'm in the very far north of England, almost to the Scottish border.
Yeah, and I have to say probably you or Steve Baxter at Sat Matrix probably have the award for the most mileage accumulated during the course of the year.
Well, I knew I was in trouble today when I arrived. I've been in Harrogate four times in the last 6 months, and the reception desk knew my name. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it is interesting. Our business is continuing to grow internationally, and, of course, we continue to do well domestically. We have, of course, the IFE this weekend, and it's unusual that I'm not at that event. You know, I believe that the final count was close to 400 franchisors, but we have eight of our staff and five of our clients at that event, and I have high expectations for outcomes for everyone who's participating in that terrific event.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great event. I look to hear about some great results coming out of it, for sure.
Absolutely.
You know, your company, Franchise Dynamics, is unique. It's one of the only ones that I think are true franchise sales outsourcing firms. Can you explain a little bit about Franchise Dynamics and what it actually does? And I think it's important. And I know on Franchise Day we try to be non-promotional, but I really think it's important to fully understand what Franchise Dynamics does, how it's uniquely different than so many other franchise consulting and sales consulting companies. And I think that will lend towards your objective as we move through today's discussion.
Absolutely. So Franchise Dynamics today is a full-service franchise sales outsourcing company. What that means is that we typically displace the internal franchise sales or franchise development function, but we do that uniquely with our staff, all of them come from the franchising industry, typically our folks will have a minimum of 5 years experience at the director level. They are W-2 employees. So, Paul, we're not doing this with independent contractors, and where that's important to a lot of our clients, recognizing that about 50% of our client base is private equity owned in some form, 20% is publicly traded companies, we can provide substantial liability insurance protection. The good news is we've never needed it, but to ourselves and our clients. As a company, we essentially work with the franchise management within a company to create a development plan. We drive the implementation of the lead generation marketing program for the client, and we have tremendous amounts of data, so we can do regression analysis based on the level of investment, the type of franchise, the buyer profile, what characteristics are we looking at there. We can literally look at hundreds of thousands of leads over the last 3 years, 4 years, and we're able to help our clients spend for lead generation very effectively. The leads come to us. They don't go to the client. Every client has a dedicated sales team. We work with those leads. We qualify those leads. We take them through the exploration of a franchise opportunity with a given client. We do all the disclosures. We host the discovery day. The client, of course, has the sole responsibility with our input, but certainly legally the sole responsibility to approve that franchisee. And essentially, we take that buyer all the way through the business planning part of the process, assist them in the raising of capital. But what we're able to do is transition that qualified candidate who makes the purchasing decision into the functions that support the launch of their business, be it real estate, site selection, construction, their initial training, supply chain, and so forth. A lot of times folks will ask me, what justifies, your business? And it's really simple. If you think about franchise company leadership today, those folks have to do two things exceptionally well. One is focus on operational excellence, right? So at the end of the day, they need to be doing the things that support their franchisees in creating revenue and running their businesses profitably so that those franchisees remain viable and, of course, the franchisor is able to collect royalty income. That's immediate. Every CEO, every vice president, every director, every manager in the company is absolutely, in a good franchise company, focused on the success of the franchisee on a tactical basis. Daily, we just have to help them solve problems, but the leadership at the same time has the responsibility to grow that system. And in most cases, given that the leader typically is coming up through operations, finance and accounting, legal and so forth, often they themselves don't have any development background, and they struggle to balance those two mandates at the very top of the organization. What we're able to do is step in on a very cost-efficient basis and to bring to them a level of depth and a team with experience that they could not assemble on their own. So as a company, we work today with 23 different franchise companies where we do full representation, but we do work across about 35 different brands. Many of our clients are companies that, if they're larger, have reached a place where today they're running multiple brands, so we're running multiple teams for them. Last year, we were involved in more than 500 franchise sales in just the U.S., and I'm not sure that maybe outside of some of the biggest companies in franchising, I'm sure Subway, as an example, did more transactions, but there's no one in our space who is comparable in size, scope, scale, employee count, revenue, and so forth. In fact, interestingly enough, I think two things I would leave your audience with. One is we're not franchise brokers. Franchise brokers play an important role in the lead generation process, but they do not, for the franchise or close up transactions. The best networks will absolutely tell a franchisor of any size. You need to have a salesperson, a sales entity to bring that deal home. So we don't compete with the franchises of the world or the Entrepreneur Source or FranNet or those other fine organizations out there, though that is a common misperception. The other thing that we see is that companies have tried to come into our space, but in addition to fees, they want to collect royalty. And that, of course, has become fairly controversial. I mean, most people you know, who follow quality franchise press or those in the media who do, you know, important work like what you're doing with your program, understand that you don't want to give away royalty for a whole host of reasons. But, you know, we start our eighth year in business, hard to believe, and in September, coming into a landscape where really no one was doing what we do today in the way that we do it today. And it's been really fun to grow. In fact, probably the nicest honor that we've had recently is I was a nominee in the 2013 Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year Awards. And I think it's a nice testament to the clients we have. Thanks. A nice testament to the clients we have, the staff we've built, the results we've achieved, because at the end of the day, we're a growth company that helps franchise companies grow. And I think it's a nice way to sum up what we do.
Well, congratulations on that. That's no easy task to be recognized by that Ernst & Young program. I mean, that's fantastic.
Thank you.
A lot of things, like we said just prior to show, wow, franchising sure has changed from where it was 20, 25 years ago, and I think probably so even over the last few years as we came through the economic downturn, and hopefully we've come completely through it and heading towards light at the end of the tunnel that's actually light and not a freight train heading our way. So, you know, from what I've seen, you know, candidates and consumers alike, you know, are changing only because they are more sophisticated and educated than ever before. They certainly are more technologically advanced. But, of course, you know, coming out of an economic downturn, they're also more, you know, cautious. They're anxious. They're also more diligent than ever before, and I think that also lends towards the ability to access information virtually at will online. So what do you see currently happening in, you know, franchise sales and development, and specifically in the franchise sales and development marketplace?
Sure. And as a company that, you know, if you look at 500 sales across the business day, we're doing about a sale every 4 hours of the business day. We've seen a couple of really large changes, of course, versus nearly 25 years ago when I started and the internet did not exist, at least as we know it today as a ubiquitous tool. We see technology having a huge impact on information flow. Today we see buyers that are certainly more sophisticated, as you point out, but better educated. You know, by the time we sit down with someone at a Discovery Day event, they are going to have a tremendous amount of information, not only on the company maybe they're looking at and on the industry, but there's going to be some real influence from things like social media, from blogs. I think it's interesting to watch how some of the best companies in franchising have really taken control and they're really driving the throughput. You know, folks recognize that facts are important, but they want to understand how that brand that they're going to invest in as a franchisee aligns with them. You know, technology has completely, I think, changed the way that people gather information. They're more sophisticated on franchising as a business development vehicle. They're more sophisticated in the clients. They're asking certainly much, much better questions. And the best organizations that we see out there are very, very good at speaking to that prospective franchising audience, not only in traditional media, but in new media terms. So technology has played a big role. The second is that the lending environment has certainly changed. And I will certainly acknowledge I'm about to give you an oversimplification, but I think back to 2003, 2004, 2005, before the downturn, where people could absolutely use their home equity or their home like it was a piggy bank. And those days, of course, are gone. I think it's increasingly become more difficult, of course, to raise capital for a prospective franchisee. Certainly, we see the lending environment becoming more favorable to franchising. If your listeners are not aware of the Coleman Report, it's a fantastic resource. Great newsletter. Bob Coleman does a great job of tracking SBA lending trends and commercial lending trends to small business, small enterprise, and through the SBA. It would appear that SBA lending is up, and that's a very, very good thing. But today we increasingly see a prospective franchisee raising money through investment or investment resources, whether it's family or friends, or whether a group of investors are coming together to get involved in franchising. You know, we do 45% of our revenue with restaurant concepts, and we represent some very, very big brands. And increasingly what we see is an investment group that maybe in the past would have put money into real estate or traditional business investment. You know, most of them don't have the stomach for commodities or exotic investments, looking at franchising going, wow. So if we invest, as an example, in a restaurant concept, we have an underlying real estate play where we could maybe buy the land or build the building. We get a business that operates with free cash flow. We have a business where we can put our hand into the cash register every day, unlike a traditional investment. And the real key is, can we find the right operating partner? Well, through the downturn, of course, certain segments of the restaurant business had a lot of difficulty, and it led to an environment where very often they can find an operating partner to combine with their investment resources to buy a meaningful stake in either a brand or franchise, or as the franchisee in a given city, community, or marketplace. So, you know, we didn't see that going back 4 years ago. And again, I think it lends credence to this change in the marketplace where we're seeing a much more sophisticated investor coming into our industry, where I do have to acknowledge 25 years ago there was a lot of buying a job, and we know some of that goes on. But at the end of the day, I think the marketplace for prospective franchisees has become really different. You know, we've gone through segments of time where certain vehicles works best as a way to develop candidates, and yet today we see candidates coming from a lot of new places, or maybe non-traditional places, and a lot better research being done. And of course, social media is a huge piece of how candidates are looking at prospective franchisors to align with today.
You mentioned Bob Coleman, and the author of the Coleman Report. Bob was my guest last year on Franchise Today, I believe it was through our Franchise Finance series. And you're right. I mean, just a absolutely great resource. It seems to me, being very much in the franchise development space, where you're, and I think you eloquently put it about, you know, investors coming together that might have typically looked at, you know, other type of investment vehicles. And I see a separation starting to occur where we have more of these astute, financially savvy investors looking at enterprise building opportunities, obviously to get the greatest return on investment, and always looking to add to that. And I think on the other side, and I think we see this a lot on the service side, we have a lot of people that are still buying a job, which I think is the reason for so much popularity in the man-in-a-van type of concepts. But even there, what I'm starting to see, because we do a lot in the man-in-a-van type of concepts, some of these enterprise type of opportunity, enterprise building investors looking at those opportunities and saying, yeah, you know, I could buy a whole region and have 30 men in vans and build an enterprise that way. So it's really unique. It's really interesting how franchising is kind of shuffling a little bit. And you mentioned social media. You mentioned a couple of other things about franchise leads. So where are franchise leads, in your opinion, coming from today, and how is this changing?
Well, I give you a couple of things. In the olden days, as my sons call them, and I hate to say it, but I lived, I guess, in the olden days, you know, we really used newspaper advertising and trade shows because there was no internet. Our business was relatively unsophisticated, and of course, you know, the market for our buyer was different back then. And probably the biggest change, Paul, we frankly have seen is in the way that we and our clients and other franchisors are using the internet. You know, even 5-6 years ago, our clients would spend up to 50% of their budget on lead generation, typically through the portals. And I think most people today acknowledge those portals need to be a part of the mix. But what we're seeing is our clients spending about the same amount of money. 46% of our average client spend is going to the internet for lead generation, but today it is almost all search engine optimization, pay-per-click, unique franchise landing pages, pointers, and so forth as a way to develop leads. The other thing that we see a lot of, and maybe this is along the lines of that same theme of the sophisticated investor, we have tremendous success often with direct mail, direct marketing programs that are targeted into communities where we'll go after operators that have the characteristics we want, but we know their concept is fully developed in a marketplace. We'll again go at them with a non-competing concept, even though we're looking for those characteristics, and we'll invite them to take a look at a brand that we want to introduce to the market. Again, other things that we find work particularly well. I'm a huge fan of PR, and of course, we have some great PR firms in the franchising space. But last year, as an example, our average client got less than 4% of their leads by number of leads from public relations, and yet that accounted for nearly 13% of our sales. So it's interesting that nothing beats the personal referral, but PR is having a big impact. I'll give you one more, and that is with our clients, we see a lot of the use of what we call the silent salesman. If you have a retail or restaurant operation, your best prospective franchisee may be somebody who's a customer today, and frankly, increasingly, we find our clients are able to put up signage, do email out to customer loyalty members, as simple as a napkin. You know, I give Fred a lot of credit, Fred DeLuca from Subway. You know, been picking up those napkins for 25 years, and 25 years ago, they said, you know, for franchise information, contact Doctors Associates, Milford, Connecticut, with their telephone number. And here we are 25 years later, and it's a website, not a toll-free number, but they're still using those napkins to help drive leads through the door. So in our world, we don't see one channel representing a huge amount of our business by way of where we're getting leads to turn into sales. We look at about 12 channels, and the mix varies broadly by customer. But in the final analysis, you know, we are able to put together well-formed lead generation marketing programs and can execute on those leads. By way of comment, and I know you and I have talked about this personally, you know, I think the biggest miss, particularly for an emerging franchisor, is that they don't have the ability or they don't make the commitment to developing a well-thought-out, professionally developed lead generation program, even though often they're going to spend more money on lead generation over the course of a year than they're going to spend on meetings and events and conventions and travel and lots of other things in their organization. And they stand back and say, well, gosh, I don't understand why my sales results, my franchise development results were inconsistent, and very often, I'm sure you have this experience, they'll pick up the phone, they'll call and say, gee, can you help? And the first thing we'll say is, you know, can we look at your lead generation plan? And they'll say, well, we don't have one. We have a stack of invoices. And I don't think it's surprising that if you're, you know, failing to plan, you're probably planning to fail whether you intend to do so or not.
Absolutely. I think it's very interesting, but I'm not surprised that you mentioned Fred DeLuca. I mentioned Fred and that organic type of franchise lead generation program many, many times on this show. I remember back in the day, the napkins and on the cups, and that was the way to generate franchise sales. And yes, I see more of that occurring, and they've done it extremely well. But I think it also lends to the customer experience, franchisee validation. I mean, Subway has good validation. They've got good unit economics, and the experience for the most part is good, because when the customer is sitting there, you know, and they look at the napkin, the environment around them, the atmosphere around them has to be conducive to them also wanting to pick up the phone or go online and inquire about more information. We are live today, Franchise Today, the Franchise Model Series. Talking with Robert Stidham, president of Franchise Dynamics, and of course we're talking franchise sales and development. And I think it's very perfect timing to deal with franchise sales and development at the International Franchise Expo was going on at the Jacob Javits Convention Center in New York City, where a lot of our franchise professionals are quite busy today as the show kicked off. Robert, you mentioned planning. lead generation planning, and I agree with you. There's so many franchisors that really don't know what the next step is going to be in their lead generation process, only because A, it's not a process, and B, they haven't planned for it. If anything, it is totally reactive, and we saw a lot of that, of course, coming through the economic downturn, where they really didn't know what the next day was going to bring. But even today, it's like, oh, leads are down. What do we do today? What do we do tomorrow? And they scramble, and they throw money here, and they throw money there, and really don't know what works. I even think to the point that a lot of them aren't even aware that as they capitalize on some of these potential sales, they're not even sure where they're coming from and the direction that they're coming to them from. And I think what compounds it is, as you know, I spend a lot of time in the digital space, and there's a lot of organizations that have made good investments in social media and other type of digital online presence, and to build this arsenal of very professional information. And yet, and as we discussed, we have a more sophisticated and a more educated franchise candidate today, certainly more technologically advanced than years ago, because that's what we are. We are a communicative society and a technology society. And they see all this information. It's very professional. But what I have found is when the transition is made out of the digital space to the real space, okay, we'll call it the live space, there's a disconnect. And what I have found in working with a lot of franchise organizations is that even a lot of the franchise sales representatives that are finally getting on the phone or meeting with these candidates that have come out of the digital world aren't even aware of what the messaging is online. And today's candidate, as we said, of a more sophisticated variety, realize that, and there's an immediate disconnect. So, you know, what are your thoughts on that? Because I know you're very much in the digital space.
Well, of course, our business is interesting in that, you know, we're big users of technology, and we hope we're smart users of technology, and that does require a commitment. And let's be honest, sometimes for an emerging to mid-market franchisor, you have, you know, big aspirations but a limited budget. You kind of have to stand back and say, gee, what are you going to spend your money on? And, you know, our advice is first and foremost, make sure your messaging is unified, exactly to your point. We want to look the same in print as we do in the digital space and have the same voice when we have PR going out and blogging. It does take a commitment of time and resource to sit down with all of the stakeholders, from the CEO to your franchise advisory council, because they are clearly going to need to be supportive of the growth efforts. You know, franchisees, as we know, Paul, they perceive that if the business that they're involved with isn't growing, the enterprise value and therefore their individual business value is diminishing. But you certainly have to get the marketing people involved, and you have to get the salespeople involved in, gee, what's our core messaging? You know, the interesting thing that we see is that the franchise sale is very emotional. Even though there's a lot of logic around it, it's a lot like picking a spouse or buying a home or selecting a college to go to. I'm sure that most of your listeners, when they met the person of their dreams, sat down with an Excel spreadsheet and, you know, gave statistical weighting to that person's positives and negatives before they made the decision to get involved, right? Because that's how most of us end up with a spouse. Of course not. In the real world, what we find is that buying a franchise is an emotional decision. And my point is, in the messaging, as you think about that construct, you have to deal with what's logical. And a lot of that information on the industry and the segmentation and the category and maybe that industry's association, all the objective stuff you can get to online, I think that the disconnect is then tying that back to the emotional part, which is, what do your franchisees have to say about you, not only on the phone but in the digital world? Whether you're doing a Google search, maybe looking for articles on the company or looking at Yelp ratings on individual franchisees as part of this process, or maybe following an industry blog, how do you make that fit together? And candidly, as you know, not easy. But I think the point of failure is often those decisions reside in terms of what's the voice, what's the messaging, what's the execution of our strategy resides with with a single person. And our experience is generally, if you can get a group of key stakeholders together with some form of a marketing professional, and clearly we have some great consultants in our industry, there are great marketing resources out there, you need to have somebody who's professional come in and be the honest broker or arbiter of, hey, this is good, this is bad, because, of course, in our own environments, we tend to get wrapped up in our own view of the world and how our business fits in. But, again, this goes back to that theme. From my standpoint, I think branding is part of the marketing effort, and if you don't have the ability to articulate who you are, what you do, and so forth in the marketplace, what's your real unique value proposition to the prospective franchisee? You know, I happen to like pizza. If you've ever seen me, you know I'm not a skinny guy, but at the end of the day, you know, being the 300th pizza franchisor doing the same thing as everybody else probably is not a winning combination. Once your unique value proposition is identified, then how do we articulate it? How do we educate the marketplace that we are different? We're doing something new, hip, cool, sexy, or maybe we're doing the same old thing, and our opportunity is we want people to walk in and think this is a pizzeria from 40 years ago. Whatever makes you unique, you better figure out how to articulate it in a way that resonates objectively, but how about emotionally with that prospective buyer, right? I've never met a successful franchisee or even a really great prospective franchisee that didn't have some passion for the business and the brand. That doesn't come from what's objective. That comes from what's subjective and, most importantly, emotional.
Absolutely. Very well said. You know, I know Franchise Dynamics does a lot in the international space. Do you see, or better yet, because I know you see it, what are some distinct differences between what's going on and or how franchise sales work through the process in the international markets as opposed to the domestic market?
Well, as an example, you know, we started our conversation, and of course I'm in England. It's really interesting to me that here there's very little true franchise law or regulation. Franchising is governed, while it is mentioned in a few places in British law, it is principally governed under contract law. And, of course, you've got different levels of sophistication around the world. The interesting thing that we see is that most of our international business today, and I think, Paul, it is an indication that the U.S. economy is improving, is geared to assisting our clients in their foreign markets. As an example, we, for this client, manage their franchise development effort in the UK with people in the UK. We don't try and sell into this market from the US. But increasingly what we see is a lot of international brands interested in coming into the United States that like to work with us, largely because it mitigates for them a lot of the upfront investment that they would have to typically make. In other words, they have the ability to transfer if it's a fairly sophisticated system and appropriate for the U.S., and not everything is, just as everything in America is not appropriate for outside of the U.S., we have the ability to assist them in coming in where they're not going to have to put in place a physical facility. We are familiar with the regulatory market, so we can help their U.S. counsel and them understand their commitments and obligations. We can refer them to consulting firms that can help them with everything from strategic planning to Americanizing their manuals and materials, because, of course, we don't do that. But we have the ability to help them sell and bring their initial franchisees into their business. So what they're able to do is lower their front-end costs, but everything they do to support those folks is cost-justified because they have traction. And, frankly, we've had some very nice success in doing that. And interestingly enough, and I think it speaks to the relative economies, I can tell you Europe is very tough. I've been here several times this year. You know, Spain with 25% unemployment, or the UK with 14% unemployment, in environments where regulatory environment, the laws, the banking environment is not conducive to individual unit franchising. Those folks very interested in coming into, of course, the world's biggest and most expensive and most regulated franchise market, coming to the U.S., we see much more of that in our business than we see, obviously, U.S. brands trying to necessarily go abroad. Of course, there is certainly plenty of that going on, but our demand seems to be more from international brands that want to come in than U.S. brands that want to go out, because those U.S. brands look at the investments that they make to go abroad and the return on that investment. Many cases when we've talked to CEOs, they say, you know, given an improving environment, we'd much rather take whatever our resources are to grow and grow those domestically, because our margins are better, we get a quicker return on those units, they're easier for us to manage and so forth. I think during the downturn, we certainly saw a lot of U.S. companies that wanted to go abroad. However, on a relative basis, our economy is much better and stronger than a lot of the rest of the world, not all of it, but a lot of it. And so we have seen a little bit of a shift in the market where 3 years ago, 4 years ago, U.S. companies were going, geez, maybe foreign markets, that's the place we can go and keep our growth and our system going. And, of course, today we've got the opposite. We've got foreign companies that want to come into the U.S., and we do that as well.
Well, of course, especially during the downturn of the economy, when a lot of franchisors saw their franchise sales almost dry up, when somebody contacted them from Dubai or someplace else in the Mideast and said, we'd like to take your concept here and we'll send you $300,000 for the rights to do so, with very little thought behind it, it was accepted because it really padded the coffers and got them through the downturn. Of course, a lot of those deals are disastrous, to say the least, and certainly any type of growth needs some strategic planning behind it. International growth really needs some strategic planning and planning in general behind it, and I wouldn't recommend doing it without a professional organization such as your own that is fully versed in it, understands the trials and tribulations as well as the pros and the cons of it. You know, and again, this all comes down to, you know, a great development program. So what other aspects or elements of an offering really makes for a great development program, in your opinion?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And we talk to folks, and we point out there are five or six things that they need to keep in mind. One is that they need to really be able to articulate the value proposition, as I mentioned earlier, of their franchise opportunity. The second, they need to have a management team that has the ability to really work well with prospective franchisees. And Paul, you know, we deal with companies of all size, but one of the things we see with very large organizations that want to come into franchising, they love the idea of leveraging their management bandwidth and somebody else's capital to get distribution through franchising. What we often see is those very, very largest companies have a really hard time working with that entrepreneurial franchisee who's made an investment. I'm thinking of a client of ours in the Midwest. It's a company that does $90 billion a year in sales. And as we engaged with them to grow and build their franchise offering, they said, well, everybody should do everything we tell them to because we're company X. Certainly not to embarrass them. But what ended up happening is that they began to develop their franchise organization. They became very frustrated with that franchise organization and now have made the decision to exit franchising, and there are about 30 units now sitting there. The failure point was not the opportunity, the offering, the business strategy, the execution, the training, the infrastructure. The point of failure was that they came into a franchise company where the folks that they were going to have to deal with didn't understand how to deal with franchisees. And we see that very commonly in big, big company environments. We would tell you that resources, you know, one of the things that is a reality is that you have to have the ability to invest to build the network. I'm always amazed, and I'm sure you've gotten these calls through the years where someone will call us up and say, I've got this great idea on a bar napkin. I want to engage with you guys and have you sell me a million bazillion franchises immediately. And, you know, we have a quick conversation and find out that the idea may be sound. In many cases, by the way, it's not. But they think that this is a get-rich-quick slap them on the back, smile at them, do the deal, take the cash kind of business. And you know, while I'm ashamed to acknowledge that there was probably a time 50 years ago that might have worked, It's not today. And so, you know, we certainly believe that, that the company has to resource. But candidly, you know, we've got to see a business model that works. We've got to see a unique value proposition. We've got to have management that understands that particularly early on, it's a roll up your sleeves and engage with the franchisee. I think they have to understand they've got to absolutely do the things that they've committed to do to support the franchisee. And then they cannot walk through the door and into franchising as a business without resources. And, of course, all of that has to be wrapped up in a great business and franchise development and training and support plan to ensure the success of those folks that they're partnering with. And, again, not partnering in the legal sense of being true equity partners, but franchising, I think, works best when the franchisor and the franchisee have the ability to work towards common goals that benefit both parties.
Yeah, certainly franchising is a interdependent relationship, without a doubt. We all need to be working together, but you know, there are so many franchisors looking for the silver bullet, the holy grail, the magic dust with respect to franchise sales and development. I remember, you know, 5 years ago when we were first moving forward with social media, and I was constantly being contacted by people and say, can you use social media to sell franchises? And after going through the whole educational process, I decided to take a different approach and ask them right off the bat, how many would you like to sell? And, of course, they get all excited, and they said, oh, we'd like to sell 50. And I said, how many did you sell last year? And I said, and they said, well, one, and the year before, two. Okay, so you want to sell 50 this year. How many leads did it take you to sell that one or two? Of course, they always want to embellish a little bit. Oh, okay, we get thousands of leads. And I'd say, so can we say 1,000 leads per franchise? Oh, yeah, definitely. So I said, do you really think social media is going to generate 50,000 leads? And then, of course, there's always the backtrack into reality. So,
right.
And as you said, a lot of, you know, franchisors, a lot of people that get into franchising, and I shouldn't classify them yet as franchisors, look at this as, you know, get rich quick. This is something, I got a good concept. I can make a lot of money doing this if I just, you know, franchise that concept. So what advice would you offer to someone starting out as a new franchisor?
Yeah, it's a great question, which is probably why you have this show. Paul, I would say a couple of things. One, I think that one of the things we see is a lot of times a new startup franchisor will go to an attorney who is not a franchising attorney. I think first and foremost, you need to sit down with someone who is engaged in this business in a substantial way, knows franchising to help you craft your documents. And good attorneys in franchising, I mean, we have so many great attorneys, they're very good often at asking some business questions that maybe that brand new prospective franchisor in this case hasn't thought about. I think that they absolutely need to have good consulting advice. The lawyer is not going to do your strategic planning. They're not going to do your financial forecasting. They're not going to write the manuals and materials that you need to have in place for the benefit of not only the franchisee, but to protect the franchisor. I think one of the things that has occurred with the internet, of course, people have said to me, oh, I don't need an attorney to write an FDD. I'm going to go find one on the internet and I'll just copy it. That is not a winning strategy.
No.
The reality is that the dollars that you spend on the attorney, the consultant, and generally the accountant in our experience, are money well spent. And by the way, you don't have to go out and spend a fortune. There are many fine attorneys that do world-class work in our industry that relative to the investment that one needs to make are going to do very fine work without costing you $1 million. But the reality is very often when we get calls, because people don't always call us when it's going well. I can assure you McDonald's is not in my voicemail today. What we find is they'll call us and say, this is a mess. Can you help? We'll take a look at what they've done. And we've said, look, what starts well ends well, what starts badly ends badly. So you copied an FPD off the internet. You guessed at what you should be doing for marketing. You have no profile for who you want to sell to. You've got no clarity of marketing message. You've burned through your capital. You haven't sold anything. And your offering is just a mess. Why is it surprising? I'm not being unsympathetic or empathetic, because everyone, again, has a finite amount of resources to work from. I just see in a lot of cases new franchisors that haven't taken the time to educate themselves about franchising as an industry, franchise development as a profession. You know, your cousin Eddie, who's selling cars, is probably not the right person to be representing you in the franchise transaction. As most of us recognize in franchising, we're asking someone to make a life decision first, a business decision second. That's what makes this challenging, right? As a sales process, it's the only sale I know that requires us to ask, in most cases, somebody to give up their job, the perceived security of a paycheck, their benefits, invest virtually everything they own in a business they've never done before with people they don't know. And that's where the development process begins. That's what makes us tough. You can't do that if you don't have well-formed offering, well-formed messaging, well-formed plan, professionals advising you as a startup, and the resources to make this go. Because you are engaging with people in a life decision.
Wow, that was some fantastic advice, and the way you put it, it really makes someone open their eyes and say, yeah, you're right, do business with somebody you don't know, give up a job, give up the benefits, give up the security, get into a business that you don't know.
Go home and have that conversation with your wife or your husband,
yeah,
or your kids. This is a huge commitment for people, and it's interesting. You know, again, I've done this for a little while, 25 years approximately. I never cease to be amazed at the person who sits in the room and signs those documents and makes all those life changes and goes out and makes it happen. They're stepping forward to give the franchisor their best. I think they deserve the very best the franchisor, the organization, the team can give to them to create that mutual success. You know, that's the magic, right? That's the magic. If we do it all right, we change people's lives in this business in an incredible way. And at least for me, I've never, ever taken that lightly. And I try to communicate that to our people. And I think within Franchise Dynamics, our people understand that we absolutely are doing, you know, something that's very powerful, and we need to do it right and well and correctly.
Absolutely. Just tremendous advice. So we are live on Franchise Today. We're talking franchise sales and development with Robert Stidham, president of Franchise Dynamics, as we're in the third segment of our franchise model series. Robert, what do you see happening in the franchising marketplace as Franchise Dynamics looks forward?
You know, I would love to tell you I have a crystal ball. I don't, but it's interesting. Within our management team, we talk about roughly a half a dozen things. Paul, we believe that the franchise development marketplace is going to continue to develop a little bit along the lines of what you talked about. You're going to have that man in a van community, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with a franchise opportunity for that person who wants to change their lives, but their goal is to be in a business where they're the owner-operator. We think the investor side of the business, particularly in investments that are retail or restaurant-oriented, where we have a generally more sophisticated business, more scalable, more variables in a bigger investment, is going to continue to evolve, where there is some crossover. But we think over time we're going to really speak as franchisors to those two audiences. In a perfect world, you'd want to have an offering where you could speak to both. I do think technology is going to continue to have a bigger and bigger impact. It's interesting, you know, Facebook, has been a great social media tool for most of us for the last few years. But candidly, we see things like Twitter and Pinterest and some of the newer forms of social media having a bigger and bigger impact, because frankly, one of the trends we see is franchising appealing to a younger and younger buyer. You know, I'm the father of four boys from 20 to 30. Two are out of college and working and married, and two are in college. And what I see amongst them and their friends, because the corporate world has changed. You know, I started my career out of college as a management trainee in a Fortune 500 company, and of course, that path does not exist anymore. Younger people more frequently considering entrepreneurship and franchising as a component of that. You know, how do you reach those folks? Well, Facebook is obviously an important part of the social media mix, but you've got to be looking at what's next. And I think most of us that have at least a little bit of an ear towards social media understand, with younger people in particular, there's a little bit more movement away from just Facebook. So we see all kinds of technology. You know, we use a lot of CRM platforms. We certainly use technology in almost every aspect of our business, becoming a bigger and bigger factor. And I guess maybe I marvel at that a little bit because I started in this business with yellow pads and ink pens. Some other things that we see, we believe the industry is going to become increasingly more regulated. And I'm sure as you've had any number of attorneys as guests, you mentioned my friends over at Chang Cohen, you know, absolutely a wonderful law firm. I think a lot of Rick and Amy, they're outstanding franchise attorneys. But, you know, whether we're talking to them or talking to other law firms or dealing with the states, we see some states becoming extraordinarily activist. We're an Illinois-based company. Our attorney general has been very forthright in saying her intent is to protect Illinois consumers, and we increasingly see not only Illinois, but I think of Maryland or Minnesota or California wanting to play a much bigger role in how franchising is regulated in their markets. I often say to people, if I were going back to school today doing what I do now, I frankly probably would have gotten a law degree. And we, by the way, believe the next iteration of regulation federally is going to be a much greater burden on the actual franchise development or franchise sales representative. I can see probably by the time my career ends in 15 or 20 years that we will be regulated as salespeople in a way that's more aligned with the way that folks that work in the securities industry are. There'll be a much higher educational requirement. I think the IFA has done a great job of stepping up to provide programs that can better educate the development professional and, of course, franchise executives broadly. But we see regulation becoming a bigger factor. So as we look at the business, and I guess you get an insight into the future by looking back at the past. What have we seen in the last 10, 15, 20 years? More sophisticated buyer. We've seen certainly more information available to them. We've certainly seen franchisors having to become more sophisticated. We've seen certainly financial resources in the form of lending helping to grow the industry. But again, borrowers today, much more sophisticated. Lending institutions, much more sophisticated. The SBA. SBA Administrator Karen Mills, I think, has done a great job of trying to help the FTC organization and certainly the SBA better understand franchising. And I think the last mile is going to be that the salespeople themselves are going to have to become much more sophisticated, and they're going to become much more regulated in how all of us work.
Absolutely. Robert, it's amazing how fast an hour has blown by, but we're closing in on a minute left in the show, and I really do appreciate you being my guest today, especially from the UK across the miles, different time zones. Thank you so much. It was a wealth of information today.
Paul, it absolutely has been a pleasure to be here, and again, have really enjoyed it. It is amazing the hour is up.
Yeah, I mean, we could certainly talk hours and hours. Next week, my guest is Amit Pametra from FranConnect. We'll be talking technology in franchising. And remember, all segments of Franchise Today are available on demand at blogtalkradio.com/franchisetodayshow. Until next week, my name is Paul Segretta, wishing you the best, the very best in this great, great, great thing we call franchising. Franchise Today is